Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hi, everybody, and happy Friday. We're here at yet another episode of Momentum Magnet, where we give you tips and tricks so that you can make better progress in your life and business. Today, we're talking about one of the most core elements of ourselves, our personality. And one of the things that I have found to be a wonderfully helpful tool over the course of my life in both work, personal relationships, and with friendships is understanding different ways to look at yourself through new lenses. Perhaps you've heard of Myers-Briggs or the DISC profile, but today we're here to talk about the Enneagram. The Enneagram has become kind of a cult favorite in a lot of circles, entrepreneurial, business, and even, you know, the infamous, what used to be, cocktail party. So today I've invited an Enneagram expert to come in and talk to us about the 9 types of the Enneagram, how you can see if you can guess your own type, how to apply some of those learnings, and how to make the best of understanding who you are so that you can get an edge in avoiding the traps of your personality, putting it to work for relationships, and learning to work to your highest potential in your job and business. So today, Callie Ammons is here to talk about the Enneagram. She has been coaching entrepreneurs and business people for almost 10 years on this subject. She lives in Colorado Springs, and she is building a movement around the Enneagram and intentionality. I am so happy to have Callie here today. And I think by the end of this episode, you're going to be able to know which type you are and some tips and tricks to put it into practice in your daily life. Hey, Callie, welcome.
Hey, Karen. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I know when I started doing this podcast in the spring, I said to myself, I need to have an Enneagram expert.
That's amazing.
I'm so glad you're here.
And here we are. I'm so excited for this conversation. It's going to be good.
It's going to be great. So for people that are listening today and they're saying, Enneagram what? I've actually never heard of this thing. Can you start at the beginning and let people understand what the Enneagram is and how it's compared to some of the other maybe more prevalent personality types like Myers-Briggs or DISC?
Totally. I think so many people get tripped up just with the word Enneagram because it sounds kind of weird. Like I'll have people be like, are you saying angiogram or what in the world are you talking about? So the word Enneagram simply just means 9 points on a graph. That's really basic. It's in the Greek. That's what it means. And what the Enneagram is it's essentially a 9 type personality assessment. So you might hear that and be like, wait, there's only 9 type of humans in the world. No, there's so much that goes into that, and we're still so different within each type. But the Enneagram takes 9 main types of our personality and looks at it, and it uses numbers. So it's 1 through 9. And based on your type, you're going to resonate with a main number, and that's what your type is. And the way that it's different than other personality assessments or quizzes or tests you might take is that the Enneagram really focuses on your internal world. So an example of this would be Karen and I both might love people and talking to people and connecting with them and helping them. But our motivation as to why we do that could be completely different. And that's what helps you figure out your Enneagram type is it's the motivation behind why you're doing what you're doing. So it's more than just being like extroverted, introverted, or really struggling to speak in front of people. Like it's so much deeper than that. And it's really the motivation as to what's happening internally with you. So that is in a nutshell, really quickly, what the Enneagram focuses on and how it's different.
That's perfect. And one of the most unique parts of the Enneagram for me when I discovered it was as you figure out which type you are, it also helps you understand what your potential vice or Achilles heel could be, which I had never really seen in any personality type. And I know when I looked at it for myself with my own lens, I thought, wow, this is shockingly accurate.
100%. And it's so eye-opening, like more than just knowing like, okay, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. Like it's these red flags in the moment as you're living that show you. So like an example, last night I was talking to my husband and I heard just some like language coming out of my mouth that I could tell like, oh crap, I'm moving to my unhealthy places as my Enneagram type, which is great. It's not this condemning thing, but it's empowering when you start to recognize, oh, something feels out of alignment internally with me right now. Like, what's going on? And that's what empowers you to get back on track into your strengths and recognizing what's happening instead of just feeling like you're randomly struggling emotionally that day. Like, there's reasons as to why, and you're empowered to figure that out.
So I have a question. Is it possible to figure out your Enneagram type by listening to the type descriptions, or does it really require a longer test like Myers-Briggs?
Yeah, okay. This is a really, really good question. And it's probably going to sound like a shocker, but I actually don't recommend tests because they're only 60 to 80% accurate. And all experts will tell you that. And the reason is, we as humans, it's really hard to test like why we're doing what we're doing. So I might be able to tell you I'm outgoing, I love people, I love talking, but it takes some time to figure out why I actually like doing that. And so when you're taking a test for the Enneagram, it's so focused on that motivation that some individuals, it's really hard to name that. So when I first tested on the Enneagram, I actually tested as a type 7 and then a type 8 the second time, but I'm a type 3. And so I believe that you can figure out your Enneagram type the best by listening to an expert teach about it and hearing the descriptions of the different types, because you're going to resonate with different types, but one of them is really going to connect with you. And when you hear someone explain the full complexity of it, rather than just like answering a question on a test, it's going to give you so much confidence and insight. So you can still take a test, but just keep that in mind. Like, as you get your result, it doesn't mean this is absolutely your type. There's probably further reading and investigation you can do on your own to really understand, is this me? Is this my core motivation? So, yeah, I recommend reading books and listening to podcasts or working with a coach and having someone help guide you through that, because the wisdom is just so complex and there's so many layers to it.
Ooh, well, I think everybody now is listening and thinking, all right, Callie, give me these types. So let's
Yeah.
start there, right? Let's ground the conversation in giving the quick overview of the nine types and what you think is the most important thing to know so that people listening can really ground themselves in who they think they are.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll just start with type number one. And remember, when I share these names, like it's easy to think of yourself like, ooh, I'm a perfectionist or I'm a peacemaker, but listen to the motivation of it. So it goes back to like why we're doing what we're doing. So the type one is often called the perfectionist or the reformer. And this individual's motivation is motivated on making sure everything is right in the world. They're very black and white in their thinking. So things are wrong or they're right. And they have this inner critic in their head, which is so fascinating because type one clients that I work with, they're like, wait, everyone doesn't have this voice in their head. And I'm like, no, you are special. Like, you have this in your head. And what it is it critiques imperfections in the world. Yes, in other people, but it is most hardest on themselves. So they can walk in a room and see the crooked picture frame. They can walk into an environment and see what is broken in an organization that needs to be fixed. There, it's like it jumps out to them because they have this high drive to make sure everything is right and perfect. So this individual is very disciplined usually. They have this like moral compass where, as a kid, they often just followed the rules because the thought of breaking the rules, they just felt like they would be wrong, like unredeemable if they chose to disobey. So it's really fascinating. So that's why the type one gets the title perfectionist or reformer, is because they really perfect their environments and themselves. They're very inspiring individuals. And you can see how those characteristics, when I go through all nine types, like you can see how that can be taken to the extreme of really unhealthy and causing some damage. Like if that perfection drives them insane. But when they use it in such a powerful way and know how to release perfection, but also own their discipline and their strength, it's so beautiful. Just the change that they can bring to environments. It's incredible. So that's the type one. The type two is called the helper. And this individual loves people. Like they are probably out of the top two on the Enneagram that love people the most. So their biggest fear is being unwanted or unloved. And so what we see is that this person is super giving and serving of their time, their energy, like everything. My mom is a type two. And growing up, it was like there were always people in our house over for dinner. Like if anyone had a need, it was like my mom was there. And that's what drove her. But the biggest thing is they want to be loved and supported. They love giving advice. And so you're going to see this over generous, very hospitable individuals. The type three, which is my type that I mentioned, this is called the achiever. And this individual is driven by success. And that's going to be different for different people. It could be success in your career, your family, whatever your inner circle sees as success, the type three is going to be driven by achieving that. And so what we're going to see is someone who is very disciplined. They're very hardworking, and they're going to do what it takes in order to achieve that success. And the reason, the motivation is they don't want to fail at anything. And so they're trying to avoid failure. So again, you can see how it can go healthy and it can be unhealthy as well. Yep. So the type four, this is called the individualist or sometimes called the romantic. So this person has very extreme emotions. Like they can be extremely joyful, connecting with people. And then, like one moment, they can feel really depressed and have these dark emotions. And those emotions make the type four feel isolated and alone and often flawed. So, an example of that would be like a type four would think that, oh, Karen has all these amazing attributes. Like she can start a business, she can impact a bunch of people, but I'm not as good as her. And they're going to have these thoughts like, something's wrong with me. I can't do what she can do. When you're sitting there and you're like, yes, you can. Like it's in you too. You're special and unique. And so the type four, when they learn to own that uniqueness, they really bring so much creativity to the world. A lot of incredible artists are type fours, so they can like write beautiful lyrics. Yeah, they move us emotionally in a way that is like, wow, I didn't even know I felt that emotion, but you're putting words exactly to how I feel. So it's really beautiful when they learn that they're unique and they're special and that they can own that and nothing's wrong with them. But sometimes it takes a while to get to that point for them. They're very emotional. And then next is the type five. So this is actually my husband's type. And they are called the investigator or the thinker. And what the type five does is they have the lowest amount of energy out of all nine types on the Enneagram. So think of it as like, I wake up in the morning, I have 100% energy tank. Well, a type five is going to wake up and they're going to have like 23%, 25% energy tank, even if they got a perfect night of sleep. And what is happening internally for the type five is they're constantly trying to navigate in their days what is going to deplete me of my energy. So they're a thinker or observer because they like to retreat by themselves, gather information and knowledge because that's what energizes them. So, like when my husband and I first got.
Of an introvert then?
Yeah, there's more layers. Like occasionally there can be social type fives where they're a little bit more extroverted and it feels shocking to see that, but you'll see that still at their core, they're constantly running through like this energy tank, like trying to manage it. But yes, in general, they're very isolated. So like when I first got married to my husband, I would be like, come on, let's do this. And he's like exhausted. And I would think he was just being lazy, but he's like, what is wrong with her? She needs to chill and slow down. So we just thought so differently because of our energy being so drastically different.
Is that a non-common pairing then, the three and the five?
Such a good question with like couples and pairings. Like sometimes, I mean, opposites really attract. So like my husband has taught me to slow down and think more strategically, which has helped my business grow a ton, where I used to just be like, oh, I'm going to do anything and get myself into all these projects. And then vice versa, I've been able to help him take more action. So sometimes, yeah, people are attracted to the opposite, where you will see these kind of like drastic Enneagram types paired together. And when both are healthy, it can be really empowering. And if both are unhealthy, it's destructible, like in that marriage or relationship. So,
That's
yeah,
interesting.
great question. So next is the type six. This individual is called the loyalist, and their title is perfect. Like they are so loyal to people because they want people to be loyal to them. So I think of like one of my family members who's a type six, and it's like he knows everyone in the world, it feels like every state he has a connection with someone. And what he does is this individual is creating these connections so that they're never abandoned in life. They really seek security and they seek this through people. Type sixes are the most anxious on the Enneagram. So anxiety really is prevalent in their life. And the reason is they believe if they think through worst case scenarios all the time, then they're going to be prepared for it. But you'll see these extremes. So I have a type six that I interviewed recently, and she was telling me like playing through like car wrecks or deaths or just like crazy things happening all the time is like her normal everyday routine. And I'm like, what? But they do this to protect themselves. They're trying to find that security. So you'll see that they're very connected to other people and then constantly playing through fear in order to protect themselves, which is so fascinating. Okay, type seven. This is the enthusiast. So type sevens have very high energy, very opposite of the type five. They have so much energy in life because they seek happiness, satisfaction, and fulfillment. And so oftentimes you're going to see type sevens have a full plate, a full schedule because it energizes them. They love it. They love going from one thing to the next because they're constantly seeking that adventure, that excitement. And that's what fuels them and carries them. Again, you can see how that can go extreme and be unhealthy because sometimes it's good to slow down and be present. But it's also really beautiful when sevens are healthy because they help a lot of us in life have fun and continue to take action when a lot of people are held back by fear. So it's really empowering. But this individual is often like the life of the party. They're going to bring energy into a space and you can just feel their energy. Like you feed off of them. So that's the type seven. The type eight is called the challenger. So if you're listening to my voice right now, after I describe this, like you're going to know if you're a type eight or you're going to think of the type eights in your life, because the type eight is like the most blunt on the Enneagram. They don't like to feel controlled by anyone or any situation. And so their whole life, like since they were a kid, they are very blunt and upfront individuals. So it's like, Callie, I don't like your shirt. They don't think that's rude. They're just like telling me what they see, what they think, like if it's a close friend. And they're like, that's being a better friend is being honest and truthful. And so type eights can often offend people. That's why they're called the challengers, because they challenge situations. They challenge the status quo. And again, this is why they're incredible leaders, is because they can pave the way, really pushing past people's opinions, not caring, and leading people in a really clear direction. But of course, it can be damaging if they're not having empathy and compassion towards people. But the type eight, the biggest motivation is that they don't want to be controlled by anyone or anything. And that's why you see that really tough upfront, blunt type of personality. So then the last one is the type nine, and this is called the peacemaker. They are like the sweethearts of the Enneagram. So the type nine really understands all nine types. So if I'm talking to a type nine, Karen's also talking to a type nine, and Karen and I are in a disagreement with each other, the type nine is totally going to understand both of our perspectives. They're going to be like, yeah, I see where she's coming from and I see where Karen's coming from. Like, makes complete sense. Because of this, this is why they're called the peacemaker, is they can go with the flow because they're so understanding of everyone. Now, what can be dangerous is that the type nine loses themselves and they're not in touch with their reality, their wants, their desires, and their passions because they understand everyone else. And what they're trying to do is to avoid conflict or tension. They don't like any tension. And so they're keeping the peace. They're keeping this very safe environment, a warm feeling when you're around them. And so when a nine is healthy, it's beautiful how they're able to really help connect people, but also stay in their own ground. And you can see how it's unhealthy when they're just trying to keep the peace and avoid conflict and not face challenging or difficult situations. But yeah, that's the motivation of the nine, is really wanting to avoid any kind of tension or any discomfort that could arise.
I love that. You did such a great job giving a quick synopsis of all the types. So I have a question for you. Let's test your knowledge. What do you think I am?
Let me ask you a few questions.
Okay, let's do it.
What is your favorite part about the work that you get to do every day?
Helping people and having it always be changing and different and exciting.
Okay. So the change and the excitement, like that gets you out of bed every morning. It's like, okay, what are we doing today?
Absolutely. Awesome. I think repetitive routine is not me.
Does it make you feel like trapped in a box when it's repetitive? Mm-hmm. Okay. And have you always been that way? Like since you were young?
No, child.
Okay.
Eight in roles.
Okay. What about routines? Like in your personal life, do you enjoy routines? You're like, no.
Nope, that's a hard no. Do not enjoy routines. I know they're good for me and I have to put them into my life because it makes me more successful, but I am not hardwired to do anything the same ever.
Mm. Has it been hard, like with your business, just being disciplined or getting tasks done? Like, do you ever find yourself procrastinating things, or are you pretty fast at taking action and getting stuff done?
Because I'm very good at being fast and taking action, I do not enjoy the details. So I have to surround myself with team members that enjoy the intense details and tiny little things.
Right, like the type ones. See, that's wisdom, Karen. Like outsourcing your weaknesses, like that's how to utilize the Enneagram. I love hearing that because it's not that like, oh, you have to grow in being like super detailed all the time, but it's like, no, surround yourself with people who are really good at it. It's awesome. Okay, one last question and then I'll take a guess. Tell me a little bit more about the helping people. Like, why does that give you so much life? Why is that exciting to you?
I think since I was a little child, one of my key strengths in life was to always see the positive in every situation and always see the potential of a person, a situation, an outcome, a problem. So problems never scare me. Solutions inspire me, and making, momentum and positive change is what lights me up. So from being, voted, most dependable class mom in high school to being sort of the unofficial, Dear Abby columnist of all my friends. It's always been a role. So it's not surprising businesses pay me to help them solve tough marketing problems because that's what I've always
Totally.
done.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. You sound very futuristic. Like you can see the potential in people maybe before they see it in themselves. And so you have like this futuristic mindset and you help people get there, correct?
I'm always looking forward as opposed to being here or backwards.
Yep. Okay, you 100% sound like a type seven.
I 100% am a type seven.
Yes.
And I did the opposite of what you said. So I have known that I was a seven since, just as you mentioned, I read all of the materials,
Yeah.
but I also did the official like Enneagram Institute paid test as
Yeah.
preparation for this episode because I wanted to make sure that I was identifying
Solidifying it.
correctly. Right. The other thing that I think is interesting that I didn't know a lot about, maybe you can touch on, is part of the deviation around from the nine subtypes is this thing called the wing. So you're
Yeah.
usually a flavor of one to two types. In my case, I am a seven wing eight, if you can't
Awesome.
guess
Yeah.
clearly. Which helps me with some of the decision making on the business side. But can you talk
Yeah.
a little bit about that element of the Enneagram?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many elements, like layers, like you're saying, that continue to go into the Enneagram, like the wings, the subtypes, how you act in conflict. Like it's very fascinating how our numbers kind of shift and move around, which is, it's not this thing to freak us out and be like, oh my gosh, this is so complicated. No, it's so cool and empowering to see how different each of us are. So the wings, like really basic, are the two numbers surrounding your type. So I'm a type three. So my wings could be a type two or a type four. And what's interesting is, in general, a lot of us will wing to one primarily, but there are some people that really don't utilize their wings much. There's some people that utilize both, like maybe in a work environment, they really see their eight wing come out versus at home, they see their six wing come out. And that's awesome. It's for you to be aware of like what's healthy about that and what's unhealthy about that. So you're utilizing it. So I wing to a two. I'm a three wing two. That's my primary wing. But this past year, some really deep self-development work I've been doing is trying to exercise my four wing, growing in the healthy aspects of that because I could see areas that I needed that in my life. And so it's really cool that you're not just like bound to like that specific wing the rest of your life. You can grow and you can do this deep work to understand what it looks like for you to step into that. But let's use your type as an example just to help explain the wing. So a seven wing eight, when I just explained the type eight, they're the challenger. Like they're very blunt. They can make decisions. They're disciplined. They're hard drive. And they also have high energy. So thinking of a seven wing eight, like you have very high energy. You're very visionary, I'm guessing. Just like you were saying, you're futuristic. And that's why you can lead people and coach them easily, is that comes naturally to you. So if you were a seven wing six, we're going to see someone who's a little bit more. I'm trying to think of the right word because I don't want to say timid, but just not as upfront. Like you're going to be slower to speak up. you're going to be slower to make a fast decision. You're going to struggle a little bit more with discipline, but you're going to potentially be better with people as a 7 wean 6 naturally, just really connected and loyal and sacrificing time, like work time, to spend time with friends and family. So you can see how a 7 wean 6 looks so different than a 7 wean 8, because you have this blunt leader who's disciplined, they have high drive, versus someone who's more high energy, but taking it to the people side of things. And again, it doesn't mean that a 7 wean 8 isn't good with people. You're just going to see those natural tendencies of, okay, Karen's really disciplined. She's visionary. She can make decisions. And so that's where it's helpful to learn about your main type, because that's still your main core motivation. But as we use our wings, you're going to see areas coming out. So me as a 3 wing 2, that's very people focused. So I'm driven by success, but then I'm also good at connecting with people and getting things done for people. So like as a kid, I would be told all the time, like, Kelly, you're just so warm. Like, I just feel so comfortable around you. People tell me all the time, I feel like we'd be best friends in real life. Like daily, I hear that. But that's part of my wing two, playing with the type three, is like, I have a natural ability of making people feel connected to me because of that motivation of the 3 wing 2. So did that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. So when you're thinking about your Enneagram in the relationship to the people that are in your life, whether that's family members or friends or coworkers, how do you suggest first thinking about it? So in my home, I'm a single mom and I have 2 children. One is an 8 and one is a 9. So we are a funny little combination. I have an 8 wing 7 and I have a straight peacemaker who probably also would be a helper type.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So when you think of relationships, like this is where it's really empowering to understand the people in your life and understanding their motivation. Like I mentioned, Kramer, my husband and I, just how different we think. And I used to think, oh, that's laziness. But then learning about the Enneagram, gosh, it just gave me so much compassion and empathy when I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you only had 23% energy and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't have to change you. So I think that's the first thing is, when you learn the people in your life, their types, it gives you compassion and understanding that not everyone thinks like you and they don't have to think like you, and that's okay. And you don't have to think like them. We're all so unique. And when we learn to empower each other's uniqueness and strengths and the gift that we all bring to the world, that's when you see this beautiful harmony. So I always say step number one is to focus more on yourself than other people. So the more you keep digging in and understanding your type and what frustrates you, what triggers you, and you can become a master at communicating with other people and just understanding yourself, your relationships are going to improve. Number two, if you're around people in your life that are willing to figure out their type and go on this journey with you, oh my gosh, do it, because that's going to be so empowering. Like you with your kids, knowing their types and being able to have conversations, so helpful. But I have family members that don't give a crap about the Enneagram and don't want to dig into it, and that's okay. But it is still helpful to use to observe maybe some natural tendencies of like, do they challenge me? Do they avoid conflict a lot? So I may not be able to type them, but it gives me this feel of like, okay, I can see these tendencies and think about the Enneagram and still communicate with them in a way that I think is going to be respectful and helpful. And so that's really empowering to seek to be a student of other people is kind of my mentality that I teach. It's like when you observe and you learn and you ask questions about the other person and you assume that you don't know anything, it's going to be empowering to know how to talk to people and communicate better with them. Now, there's so many more layers that you can dive into. So like with your kids, I don't know if you guys have done this, but there's ways that we all act in conflict and we can look different. You kind of move to different triads is what it's called. So my husband and I, the 3 and the 5, actually look the exact same in conflict. We take a logical approach. It's so fascinating. And so for us, we've had to learn, like when we're in conflict, how do we resolve this quickly by both knowing each other's conflict coping styles, and how do we not just approach it logically, but bring some emotion and empathy into our discussions, because that's not natural for us. And it's really empowering with the people you're close to in your life to understand how they handle conflict and how to figure out a middle ground together. And just to have that common language of like, you know, I walk into the room and Kramer's like, hey, my energy tank feels so low and I really care to hear about that tough conversation you had with a client, but can we talk about this in 2 hours? And I can be like, oh my gosh, yeah, thank you so much for communicating that with me. versus before I used to think like, wow, what a jerk, he's not listening to me, because we didn't have that common Enneagram language to use. And so that's where it's empowering in relationships, is when you learn to both communicate above and beyond and tie it into your type so that you can understand like, okay, here's what we can do and here's how we can move toward a solution.
That's interesting. Can you talk a little bit about what the different types do or fall back on when it comes to communication or conflict? That's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two different types of triads. So there's the conflict, how we all handle conflict. And then there's also one called our relational coping styles. So what that means is like what we naturally try to do when we're trying to get a relational need met. And relational needs would be like seeking affirmation, just being heard, compliments, having that connectedness with another human. And so the conflict coping styles, there's three of them. There's the logical, which I mentioned I'm in. So that's like, I totally pull in facts. Like if we're going to argue or debate about something, like drop the emotion and let's talk about the facts. Then there's the withdrawn style. So nines are in this. They are like, see ya. Like they shut down. Like they don't know what to say. They don't know how to communicate. And they feel like they have to escape that moment. And then the other one is the dutiful. So they're really going to seek to serve people and kind of mirror the energy, or I'm so sorry, that's the reactive is what that one's called. They're going to mirror the energy of what's happening with that other person. So a type eight is in the reactive style. So if they're yelling, they want you to be, yeah, they want to have an intense conversation with you and you to talk back at that same level of energy, right? So you can
see where- I'm laughing because the intensity of the conversations that I have had with my son since he was speaking, I mean, they are intense. Whereas my daughter, who's the nine, it takes a lot to pull the problem out of her or to get her to open up about her feelings. And she's always even, always even keeled, always in control, very rarely emotionally upset. So I'm guessing in the avoidant personalities, that would be the nine and the four. And what would be the last one that would be avoidant?
You're right on track. I'm so curious if you can get it right.
Two?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 9, 4, and 2. That's interesting. Cause I can think about all of my friends that fall into that
totally
camp.
Yeah.
Do you find that people gravitate towards folks that are similar types? Because I have a lot of sevens in my life.
You know, I've really been asked this a lot, and I don't, from my research and like the people I've worked with, I don't see a consistent pattern where I can say like, yes, 100%. I think it really depends on the individual and the type of sevens in your life you're attracted to. So like I think of in my life, I've been exposed to a lot of unhealthy threes. And so I'm not attracted to threes but my inner circle, they've been unhealthy, where I could see if it were inspiring healthy threes, I would be attracted to them, but I've been more attracted to people opposite. So I see both. I think it depends on your experience in your life, what you've walked through, the people that you're surrounded with. I think naturally we just gravitate towards healthy individuals. And so maybe, you know, like in your life, you've been blessed with some healthy sevens. And so absolutely they get you, they understand your mind and you can be yourself around them. I do think there's truth that we all desire to be known and seen and understood. And so if a common Enneagram type can understand my ambition in life and not tell me that I'm too much for them, I love that. Like I love when someone's just like, oh, that's awesome, all the things you're doing, and they empower me and encourage me in that versus shut that down. And so, yeah, I think naturally we're all going to be attracted to people that can help us become more of the individual that we already are, which would be other types understanding us or the same type understanding us. But sometimes I think the opposite can also attract because you're attracted to maybe a weakness within yourself. Like how you talked about detailed people, like your team, you have people who are more detailed than you. They're probably not type sevens if they're really detailed. Yeah.
No, but I tend to gravitate more towards a three than a one.
Okay.
Like yeah, I think the majority of my team members would be, you know, a 2-3 as opposed to the real rule follower one, because in my world, we buck systems. We don't like rules for rules' sake. So we do not do well with a lot of prescriptive structure. I will break that structure immediately.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense. Like, I would be more attracted to a type seven with high energy that's healthy and is going to push me. But a type seven that's unhealthy, they're so undisciplined that they don't take any action in life. Like, they can be kind of lazy. And so, like, that I would be like, no, thank you. Like, I want you
Right.
to take action. But with you, it's like, oh, yeah, like we could talk business all day. We could talk about like our high drive and energy. It's like, yes, put me with a cup of coffee in you.
That really helped me during quarantine and understanding my Enneagram was reading more about the seven and realizing that for me, my vice is excess of pleasure. Like when you say an unhealthy seven, an unhealthy seven is so focused on leaning into the positive that they will overdo the band-aid to make themselves feel better, whether that's overeating the COVID carb, whether that's avoiding the workouts, whether that's, drinking too much or, doing drugs, not my problems. But
But just
for me,
super extreme.
yeah, it's super extreme. For me, before this, my extreme was spending a lot of money on vacations. So I used escape as my drug. And I spent all of 2019 on a plane or planning a vacation. So as the world shut down in the spring, it was an interesting test for me to say, hey girl, you're gonna have to deal with your hard feelings staying at home and not avoiding them.
How did you handle that? Like, I'm just curious, like as a type seven in COVID, like especially in the beginning, like being quarantined, like how did you work through that? Because the seven clients I've worked with definitely struggled the most.
It was really hard. I mean, I would do anything to try to instill a lack of structure or routine, whether that was getting interesting food delivered, trying to cook new things, making new recipes, trying new shows, downloading new video games. I mean, I was still always looking for, an avoidant thing. And then funnily, strangely enough, I ended up breaking both feet about
Oh my
8 weeks
word.
into quarantine. So it was as if the universe said, we're going to take your positivity escape mechanisms and we're going to take them all away. And you're going to just deal with not being that happy stuck at home.
Oh my
Homeschooling.
gosh.
So it was interesting, but I think it was a good lesson to come back from. And I have realized what has been beautiful is that I actually don't need those really big things to be able to have a feeling of diversity and escaping the sameness, that predictability is something that is very off-putting to me. So there's ways in which I can do it that don't have to be so drastic. So there's been a lot of positive things for me in quarantine in terms of like spending time on boosting my savings and making my business run more economically efficient and looking at all those wins, but with a different lens of how do you add that added feeling of special without it having to be something very grand?
I love that. And I love how you shared examples that you were like creative just in different ways. Like, okay, so 2019 was all this like traveling, elaborate trips, but you did try to control what you could control at home of like, okay, how can I be creative with ordering fun food or making something different? Like, that's what I think is empowering. It's like, yes, knowing your motivation of like, okay, am I trying to escape something or am I trying to lean into my strength of like being creative and have fun? And that's what is so healthy and empowering is when you can distinguish that different motivation of what's happening and those types leaning into that power. Because it's like, as a seven during quarantine, if you just completely shut down and gave up and you're like, fine, screw it. Like, I'm not going to have any fun. I'm not going to be creative. Like, that would lead you to a place of depression and unhealth. And so, yeah, it's like, okay, sevens need to figure out how to have some fun during quarantine. And ones need to organize their whole house again and like have fun doing that and creating structures. It's like learning that nothing's wrong with you for having that desire, but learning how to bring that out of yourself, which I mean, it sounds like it was a great and fruitful season for you that you learned so much through it, which is awesome.
It was. And as I was preparing for this episode, I did listen to a lot of podcasts. And one of the neat little nuggets I got for my personality type was this idea that a seven becomes really healthy when they realize they need to focus on quality, not quantity. It's that idea of it doesn't have to be a million things that are different and exciting and fun one thing with the right impact is enough. And we need to err on the side of a little less. And a little more predictability, which has been an interesting and fun lesson. And that is the part of the Enneagram that I feel like has really changed the way I approach my work and I approach my life. And it has a little bit of an easier way to wrap yourself around the watchouts, I think, than even the DISC or the Myers-Briggs, which tells you a lot, but doesn't give you a lot of those actionable steps of how to make an improvement today based on where you are and what your natural tendencies look like.
I love that. And it's like, it's never ending either. That's the thing. It's like, we're all going to go in seasons of like being really healthy and then getting locked down for COVID. And it's like, wow, I'm struggling emotionally with this. Like life is so like up and down. And that's the cool thing is the Enneagram isn't just like, oh, take a test, find your number, now you're done. But no, it's this continual journey. Like you said, it's like, how do I apply this wisdom today to help empower me to love my life and continue to experience growth? No matter where you are, with like no judgment, but just taking notice of yourself and being able to make those small implemental changes, which is so empowering. But I love that you tied that in with type sevens, that it's like you can still have creativity or something different change in your life, but it doesn't have to be this extreme elaborate thing. And for sevens, it's like when you're fully present in your life, just okay to slow down, okay to do the one different thing. It's beautiful because you actually start to enjoy it and experience that fulfillment so much more because you've slowed yourself down instead of doing something in the moment, but your mind is like 10 years in advance already and you're missing out.
100%. So people that are listening today and saying that they want to dive deeper into the Enneagram and really learn about the types and the shadow sides of these different personalities, what is a great first book for them to read?
I personally love The Road Back to You. It's by Ian Cron. He just did a really good job at keeping it simple, but also going a little bit deeper to help you understand the complexity. And he's really great at storytelling. So you don't feel like it's just all this knowledge being shoved, but he storytells and really helps make, oh, okay, that's what it means to live this out and to look like that. So The Road Back to You by Ian Cron, definitely the first book I would recommend.
We'll definitely link that into our show notes. Perfect. So if somebody is interested in working with you directly, can you talk a little bit about how you teach people about the Enneagram and what kind of services you offer?
Yeah. So right now I'm actually about to have a baby. So I'm going on maternity leave really soon. We're getting,
you are?
Yeah,
you're I'm on due. Video, folks. And I would not even know this woman is pregnant. I do not.
There's no belly down there.
Oh, all right. So I could not see her bump at all. I had zero idea she was with child.
Yeah. I'm due at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. So we'll see. I'm like, what year is this baby going to fall in? But right now with my services, I have an online membership that I run. It's called Enneagram Insiders and I love it. It's my favorite theme. So there's like Enneagram Galore Library, where I show up every single week and teach live and help people figure out their types. We dive into real life themes that we're walking through. So like Karen just talked about as a seven, like the extreme personality and wanting to do all these extreme things. Like those are the topics we dive into. And I provide a lot of practical strategies of like, but how do we work through this? How do we experience more freedom? So my membership, I help people figure out their type and grow in their Enneagram journey. So that's the best place, honestly, to get connected with me. You get access to me, you get to ask questions, and it's just an incredible community of individuals who are obsessed with the Enneagram and growing themselves.
I love that. So your website, let's give it to everybody one more time, and then we'll also link it in the show notes.
Perfect. Yeah, that's callieammons.com, and you'll pretty much find everything there. My podcast, blog posts, membership, all of it.
Fantastic. Well, I think everybody is probably Googling their personality type right now or trying to learn a little bit more. And I really thank you for joining us today. You know, Momentum Magnet is here every Friday talking about things that you can add to your life and business to help you make more progress and momentum. We always have our podcast linked on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora. We love reviews and give yourself a chance to tell us what you think of the episode, what you found out that you were, and let us know if you want to have more content about the Enneagram, because I certainly love this topic myself. And if you'd like to reach out directly, you can find us at momentummagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, a marketing agency owner of Marketing Magnet, and we have been so happy to have you today. I look forward to speaking with all of you next week as well. And Callie, it has been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much, Karen.
Okay, great. Happy Friday, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit momentummagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.